Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us for the show, and we are delighted to be with you. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get started with what is going on today. We have a lot to talk about. We have a lot of interesting topics, and we have a great panel. So let us begin. You know, first of all, I want to say, Alan Chartok, it is a blessing to work for you.
It's
a blessing to work for you and to
but
be no I'm just I'm mocking the president's cabinet meeting yesterday.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
but
and I accept all your praise. Thank you very much.
Alan Chartok is with us this morning. Good morning, sir. How are you? Well, it really is a blessing, but it's
sure.
It's very nice, but
I got it.
Unlike the president, you didn't give us notes.
Well, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's unbelievable. It looks so stupid.
Come on, everybody.
You're great, Joe.
Yeah, there you go. Well, good morning, Alan. Very nice to have you here. Mike Spain, he's no slouch either. We love him. He's our he's our regular here on the program on Tuesdays and whenever we beg him to be here. And he is also the associate editor of the Times Union newspaper, no small feat. And we thank you very much for being with us.
Hey,
good morning.
Mikey.
Good morning. Good morning. Yeah.
And J.P. Miller, who is the founder and publisher of The Empire Report, is with us, and we are thrilled to have you with us, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
Nice to have you.
I have a little problem with your Empire Report. It's so good that every day, you know, when I allot a certain amount of time, you get up in the morning, you're going to take a fast look, and I get entrenched in that thing, and I can't get out.
It's nice of you to say. Thank you, Alan.
Welcome.
It's a blessing.
Yeah, it is a blessing.
Heartfelt.
It is a blessing.
You know what got me about that story about the cabinet meeting? The New York Times version of it said the comments were in keeping with an intense effort by the White House to boost Trump's mood and change the subject from the damaging testimony last week of the ex-FBI head James Comey. I mean, is that your job in the White House to go around and boost the mood of the key guy?
What, you think Andrew Cuomo doesn't do that?
Do they have to boost his mood?
And right under there, you were running a piece this morning on the Empire Report, which talked about how Reince Priebus.
You're going to get letters.
Reince Priebus said that his foot was on a banana peel in the White House. One foot out the door and one foot on the banana peel.
Yeah, I actually think that the White House, that those staffers that did that, I shouldn't even say staffers, cabinet secretaries that did that yesterday, could get in trouble for President Trump. I can't believe that that's what they wanted to orchestrate. I can't believe that
you're
that's
kidding.
What they... I just can't believe it.
You're kidding.
And it looks horrible.
Oh, I think that's exactly what they wanted to orchestrate.
Yeah, no, they do.
Perhaps they didn't intend it to look kind of as forced and you know, scripted as it did.
Well, just because you couldn't see the gun to their head doesn't mean it wasn't there.
Well, perhaps. But, I mean, it might have been one of these things. Well, when the president comes in, let's all just affirm our support for him.
Oh, come on. I mean,
that seemed a little, I don't know.
Oh, come on, you know.
Okay, so it didn't go so well.
I can't believe that would be the script. Everybody go around and say how much you love the president.
Okay, but he does that for himself, though. I mean, every time he meets people, he says, I won, I will have a record victory, and then goes around and shows people pictures of how big the crowd was. I mean, in keeping with that narrative, this is no different.
He does like flattery. That was the whole way he was treated in Saudi Arabia. You know, they projected his image on the sides of buildings. They had giant flags, and they had
I like it too around here. Yeah. You know, I went down to the World War II Museum a number of years ago, and before they put the second building up, my son is in New Orleans, and I got there with Roselle, and on the thing in front of it, best thing ever happened, says, "Welcome, Dr. Alan Chartok," flashing.
Yeah, there you go.
See, now it's the same thing, don't you think?
Do you think that was obsequious, Dr. Chartok, for them to do that for
yeah,
you?
Yeah, sure.
Yes, it wasn't. So do you like to have people, you know, praise you publicly?
Absolutely not. Now, I could say yes to be funny, but if I said yes, the same lady who writes me every day that she doesn't want to know more about me, she'd write another letter, so I'll have to say no.
Now, when I was growing up as a kid, we would go to hotels, and they would do the same thing. They would say, welcome...
Joe Donahue.
No, welcome Phil Donahue and his family.
Right.
Welcome Phil Donahue and his family. And just because... And then when my dad checked
was
in...
Was your mother Marlo Thomas?
Well... No, but Eleanor Donahue.
Was your father Philip? Was your father Philip?
Yeah, Phil Donahue.
Oh.
So whenever we would go...
was on Father's Note, but
that's right.
Best,
so this
right?
happened many times where we would check into a place and it would say, welcome Phil Donahue, and then my father would check in and they would just be horribly disappointed. Oh, it's you.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
Well, we got the sign out there. Anyway.
Right. Yeah. Well, all right.
No, but...
Did we introduce everybody?
But, yeah, you did.
Yeah, okay.
But do you mean to say that the Trump people by now don't know where the press is vis-a-vis him, what they're going to do to him for something like that?
I can't believe that that's what they scripted. It obviously feeds into the narrative that no one is able to tell the president when he's wrong, that they're all a bunch of lackeys. And whenever a scripted or an event by the president is obviously going to be what they make fun of on Saturday Night Live this week.
Right.
That is the SNL skit right there. And so I can't believe that they would have choreographed
it like
that.
Believe it.
I agree with you.
I don't.
Well, I agree with you. I think your premise is correct. However, where I disagree with you is that this is a president who thought that he would be praised for firing James Comey, too. Meaning that because he was taking decisive action, that he would, that praise would be heaped upon him. So I think that they misread that a lot.
No, in fact, it was the stupidity was that they thought they would get away when they fired Comey of saying they were doing it because of what he had done
to
Hillary.
Right, exactly. Well, but that's a
Hillary
misreading.
Thing, yeah, misreading is right. They
well, that's what I'm saying.
They underestimate everybody.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, their genius is playing to the base.
But do you think this has really any negative impact on the support he continues to get from his base?
No, that's right, yeah. Mike. Yeah. And I think that may be what they're saying. Okay, we'll go around the room, because they obviously did that. We'll go around the room. Everybody will say good things. And as I said before, what, you think Andrew Cuomo doesn't demand that kind of praise? They all get a little hoppy on, loopy on that stuff. So go around the room, but it'll be good for the base.
Different, though. I mean, I think having respect for the president and for knowing there's an aura of the presidency, right? And I think that to say yes, you're in the White House, and that's a big deal, and you're serving at the pleasure of the president. And so I understand that. But to take it to this level and to see it where it as you said, JP, it just seems so staged. I'm privileged to be here, said Labor Secretary Alexander Acosta. Deeply honored. It's an honor to be able to serve you, Mr. President, said Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
Did you hear that they were required to say who they were?
Yes.
Is that because he's not sure who they are?
Maybe name tags would be a bad visual. I don't know.
Well, Ronald Reagan famously went up to the housing secretary at a conference of mayors and said, "Hello, Mr. Mayor." And he said, "I'm your housing secretary." Oh, hello. You know, you have a lot of people in your cabinet.
See,
you
got to
remember
Nelson,
a lot of names.
See, now Nelson Rockefeller was a genius, because what he did is he had a little guy standing behind him. He was little, too.
Right.
He had a little guy standing behind him, and he'd say...
Is that true?
Yes.
Nelson Rockefeller was a small guy?
He's a small guy.
Oh, I didn't know that. Very, I always had him.
No,
thought him...
You know why?
He was not...
You know why? Because
why?
They put him on a stool. They put him on a box when he stood up. He was a tiny little guy.
I thought he was our size, JP.
Yeah,
well,
see?
That was the stool.
Yeah. Okay.
He thought you were
he liked to be flattered also. You know.
So, but the guy behind him would say, that's Shirley Shottock.
Right. Well,
and my mother would come home
people.
And she would say, "Oh my God, he knew exactly."
There were people who used to work in the legislature. I don't know if they're still over there. A couple of women who would go to, they would be hired to go to events and stand next to the legislator having his fundraiser and whisper in the ear, you know, "This is the lobbyist for the state environmental fund, Larry Jones. Hello, Larry. How are you?" You know, the senator would say and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's fairly common to have someone prompt you. But his own cabinet to identify themselves, you know, it just seems a little unusual. Noticeably, though, James Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, did not praise President Trump. He said it's an honor to serve the men and women of the armed forces and to serve our country and Trump looked at him. He's sitting right next to him. He said, "Thank you very much." You know.
Well, he's smart, and if you watch the video, Pence said it first, and then maybe the next guy did, and then maybe all the other cabinet secretaries say, "Boy, do we all have to go and praise this guy before we give our statement?"
Wilbur Ross was very awkward.
It was ridiculous.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. But I hadn't seen a production of King Lear quite that good, you know? It's very nice. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back and continue our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable. We'll take your letters, panel at WAMC.org, right after this. Welcome back to The Roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning, the 13th of June, 25 minutes past the hour. Alan has some letters for us before we go to our news break at the bottom of the hour.
Okay. Catherine said, all those people around the table are exhibiting the same inner squirming Comey felt when Trump said he, quote, hoped Comey would let go of the Flynn investigation. They knew exactly how they were expected to respond, and yet they were uncomfortable or cowed enough to not consider the optics. All right. Is there anyone, says Helen, in Trump's inner circle who is capable of expressing an option that goes against Trump's ideas and actions? We are all in serious trouble. But I have thought that since the election, I really think that Trump's insecurity and ego are far worse than most people can imagine. And that's from Greg in Cooperstown. And we heard from Anthony. Alan, I just want to thank you for allowing me to send you and the panel and most of the listeners in our area emails expressing my concern in these Trumpian times. And that's from Anthony. And Bob says, did any of the panel notice what finger Trump had raised against his cheek in the cabinet meeting picture in the New York Times this morning?
Yeah, that has been written about. He does that. I think it's a natural thing, but
it's natural, all right.
I mean,
he
takes his pinky and his other finger. What's that finger?
Ring finger.
Thank you. And puts those under his chin, and then he takes his forefinger and his thumb and puts them behind his ear, leaving the middle finger plainly across his cheek.
Well, Bob from Albany says there's a reason for that. Tell me that's not a shot at the press.
Well,
that's not a shot at the press.
I think it is.
Well, you know what? We're talking about something that really is not an impeachable offense here.
I think it is.
Trump is a master at theatrics, and he studies stuff like the WWF, and I wouldn't put past him to have the slightest little thing be a slight ding.
But I think we all have learned at certain times of various ways to, you know, adjust our glasses.
Come on.
To, you know.
Let it be said for the record which finger Joe used to push the glasses up on his nose.
I think there's ways that we try to get that point across. So I don't think I agree with Mike. I don't think that's an impeachable offense.
Well, obviously it's not an impeachable offense, but I think we should. Some of us should say it is. Okay, so Ken says, one of the stories in the New York Times indicated that as the cabinet members realized they were being videoed, they became more uncomfortable with the situation.
Well, I think that was something too, wasn't it? A lot of them didn't know it was going to be. And this is to your point, JP, of saying, you know, that you didn't think it was going to look that way, but it seems very much they knew what they were going to do, and they knew they were going to be on cable and they were going to be on television across the board. So
come on. I mean, how many of them have to go home to their wives or their husbands or their significant others every night and say, do you know what that jerk made me do today? I mean,
I just saw it on CNN.
Yes, I saw it on social media. You're the laughing stock of the country. Congratulations.
Awkward.
But really, they can't. Nobody. They took the job. They sold their souls. They're doing the thing. But the fact of the matter is, they can't.
When you take a cabinet position, you're required to carry the water for the administration. This just was a little bit too far, that's all.
Well, no, but I'm talking about the dissonance between the principal and the members of the cabinet. You're right. You have to do it. But there's a big difference between sitting at the table with Barack Obama You know, the people in his cabinet weren't going home and telling Mabel, hey, Mabel, you know, you have no idea how bad this is.
Let's take a break. We will be back in just a moment to continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We'll talk about many other things, including the Jeff Sessions hearing, which will be airing here beginning at 2:30 this afternoon on WAMC, as well as the travel ban setback and many other things. We'll talk about all of that and more when we return. Panel@WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and JP Miller, and they make up the panel, and you make up our audience, and we welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org. The one thing I want to get away from the story about the cabinet meeting, the one thing I do want to say, because a couple people brought it up in the letters about, you know, this is just made for Saturday Night Live and so forth, but we have to give our friend Chuck Schumer credit for...
Absolutely, and somebody makes that point in one of the letters
for doing a he was very quick to do a parody video right after all of this happened of poking fun at the president, and there's a point where you say to yourself, oh, that's pretty funny, beat, I wonder if they don't have anything else to do.
good point. I mean, it is a challenge for the Senate minority leader to really have a lot of impact. He's trying his best, and I'm not, Alan, I don't know. What do you think how Chuck Schumer's doing trying to rally the minority to try to, you know, combat the policies they disagree with that are coming from the White House and the Republicans who control Congress?
Well, I have to say that I'm a huge Chuck Schumer fan. I think he's great, and I love what he did. However, I have to say he's not doing too good. In other words, the agenda is being controlled negatively or positively by Trump. And maybe there's some real dissonance here. Maybe there's some, what they call that, shiny bright objects happening. So that when, in the same time he's trying to put a health care bill through the United States Senate, we're talking about this stuff. So, and it's fun. But on the other hand, the thing about Schumer that I like so much is he really understands what people react to. And this was a brilliant move on his part. Let's face it. We spent the first, you know, half an hour talking about it. And he knows it's what everybody is interested in. And he'll say to the waiter, I'll have some of what the guy over there has.
Yes, he got it up in time for the evening newscast and the morning newscast. It was fun, tongue-in-cheek, and very effective, I thought.
Yep.
All right, let's go to some letters, and then we'll move on to the other topics. As I mentioned, that we have many of those.
Okay, how dare the panel ridicule our commander-in-chief, or is that grief? I spit out my Cheerios watching that on the news this morning. This man is obviously mentally ill to need to have his ego stroke constantly, lock him up in a nice padded cell, and conduct some shock therapy. Stat, we are in deep trouble, Lisa from Pocock. Let me just say, he is not the only politician I've ever known who had this problem. I have to say that to all of you. Okay, let's see that one. Oh, yeah, okay. I got it. Yes, he was at Trump Tower, wasn't he, Dennis Rodman.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He definitely was outside Trump Tower in his photo.
Okay. Anita says, the cabinet behaved like the neighbors in the Billy Mummy Twilight Zone. If you dissed the six-year-old, you were sent off to the cornfield.
The cornfield. I remember
yes,
that
dear
episode.
President Trump, it was a very good thing you did. Okay. And Tim says, respect should be earned, not given. And John says, even Kim Jong-un thinks that Trump should dial it back a notch. I hope he's kidding.
No, that we're agreeing. Who do we agree with there?
Peter says, why are all the media, including CNN, Network News, and WAMC, you folks, so distracted by every non-story, thereby playing into Trump's strategy? Talk about the real issues, immigration, health card, and impeachment. We have talked about all of them, and we will talk about all of them. Hi, panelists.
I still think that I forget now who said it on this panel, but I'll give you all credit. Which is that it does. It's a story when it shows the culture of the White House.
Yes,
I think it's a story when it shows what is going on and the dynamics that appear not only of what they want to show, but what seems to be the underlying fact. And I find that interesting. I agree with Alan. I don't think it's a distraction because we're talking about all of the other stuff as well. But it's also, let's face it, it's amusing to watch people so awkward. Yeah.
Okay. Senator Schumer beat SNL to it. Check out his parody online. It's hilarious.
Humor, about that. Yeah.
Humor and the round table are the only things getting me through this sham of a president. Thanks all. And that's from Lou. Let me just say something. And I said it before, and I'll say it again. Yes, this does lead to humor, but none of this is funny. This is not funny.
You don't laugh, you're going to cry.
Yeah.
This is not funny.
Well, no.
If he's leading the country down to the road of dictatorship, for example, or if he's going to take 23 million people off of health care, or if he's going to, do any of these things, it's really not funny. Peter says there was Papa Doc and Baby Doc Kushner, adoring supine cabinet in his thrall. Conservatives want to end the investigation just like they did with Benghazi. Oh, no, wait. Peter, wasn't the cabinet meeting like that old Twilight Zone episode where we did this one already.
Right.
The brazen little boy.
It occurred to more than one of your listeners.
Okay, here we go. Joseph says, forget calling the members toadies or sycophants. Quisling is the word that keeps coming to my mind. For those of you who don't remember, he was the pro-Nazi prime minister. I think it was Norway, but I can't swear.
One of those Scandinavian countries.
Right.
All right, let's move on to other topics, shall we? And I'll get them out of your way, Alan. There you go.
No, it's just...
Make it clear. All right, here we go. So there is the story, many other stories making news this morning, and as soon as I can get
Jeff Sessions, in the meantime, while you're wondering...
That's
huge.
2:30 this afternoon, Jeff Sessions going before... going for a hearing on the...
Intelligence
Committee. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we'll be airing that here on WAMC. The interesting thing about the hearing, of course, is what he will say, what he can say, what he can't say, and then given that he perhaps has not told the entire story under oath before, what he will do this time.
Yeah, when I think about this hearing, certainly last week's Comey hearing was the main event of the heavyweight fight, and the Sessions hearing is what some are considering the undercard, but a lot of times when you go to a boxing match, the undercard is actually the more exciting fight with a lot more fireworks. I anticipate a lot of back and forth between Sessions and his former Democrat colleagues in the Senate. This is certainly a high stakes, exciting hearing and testimony. And Jeff Sessions has been through dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of these. Expect him to be well prepared and excited to spar with his former Democrat colleagues.
Now, I know that you say that you are neither a Republican or a Democrat. You play it down the middle in the wonderful Empire Report. But I'm going to accuse you of being a House Republican. And the reason is because you keep saying Democrat senators. You see, that's the difference. Democrats say Democratic senators. People who, Mike is making a face. The Republicans always say Democrat senators. Don't you see the difference?
You told me about this last time.
I did.
And that's my tell, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I don't think about it, but if you hear it, I must be doing it. And I will work on that.
You don't have to. It's just the way you are. Don't worry about it.
Well, there was some discussion.
What do you want?
That Sessions... there was some discussion that Sessions was looking forward to going back among his former colleagues in a very unusual kind of way. Even people like Schumer and Al Franken get along with Sessions. I mean, they have a higher level of civility over in the Senate than they do in the House, maybe with the exception of Ted Cruz.
I can't help saying you're having Al Franken on today, aren't you?
Al Franken will be on this afternoon at 3:00.
And, wow. And what did he say about Ted Cruz, Joe?
He said that I like Ted Cruz more than any of my other colleagues, and I hate Ted Cruz.
And with that exception, there is some level of respect, and you will. I predict you'll see that at 2:30. They'll be extremely deferential to him, and they'll say wonderful, nice things about him, and then they'll hit him like a machine gun.
They're going to hit him with a hammer. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jim.
They all want to be that senator that's on the evening news really attacking him. And so I think they're all going to go at him very hard. He's going to be prepared.
Democrats, not the Republicans.
The Democratic senators are going to go at him very hard and hammer him. But he will
You're
be prepared.
You're a quick study, man.
He will have his talking points down. He will be ready for every tough question. He'll be well prepared. And I am really excited for 2:30 p.m.
Oh no, it's going to be fun. That means we can't have a vox pop.
Well, you can have half of one. We talked to you about that, right?
It's better than no loaf at all.
Yeah, that's true. I like your analogy about the undercard. I think that's a good analogy.
It is. Yeah,
because
it really works.
Because I think that this will be this could be very. I say this
could
in a political wonky sense of, you know, be quite exciting and interesting to watch. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go to more letters. We'll have other issues to discuss. We welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the roundtable panel and group. Before we move on to... Yes?
Yeah, because I'm just holding up my hand because I did think that the question I would want to ask Sessions today is... Senator, we all know you lied to us about speaking to the Russians. So why should we believe anything you say today? That's the question I'd ask.
An interesting thing is I think they're all limited to 7 minutes or something like that, which is really not long enough for them to ask many questions. And there is...
That didn't take that long.
And there is...
No, you gotta make it count.
Well, there is... What about Sessions' testimony, his last testimony? There is, what about the Russian investigation? And then one is about the cover-up or the obstruction of justice to the Russian investigation. So there are three major topics that they're going to want to cover, and each senator is going to have different things that they want to hit.
So, and, I'm sorry, Joe, but and the big one, is, to me, is Mueller. Because now they're beginning to broadcast.
Toying
they're
going with that idea.
Yeah, throw him out. And in order to do that, you got to go through the AG or the deputy AG. What happens then?
So the question I have is while the narrative coming out of the White House seems to be that this whole thing is a sham, it's a witch hunt, and we need to move on. It was completely vindicated by the Comey testimony. So does that change after this? We don't know, obviously. Does that change, or does it just further that narrative that it's a witch hunt and we have to get on with the business of the people, according to the Trump administration?
I think that's a legitimate question. I mean, what is the Intelligence Committee looking into? Are they looking for some gotcha so they can maybe impeach Trump, or are they looking for true evidence of Russian interference and attempts to influence the election and the new administration, and whether that was something that was inappropriate and what needs to happen because of it? And to that extent, it's legitimate. And you know, which is it? Do you want to get a gotcha here, or do you want to find out what Russia is doing to interfere with our democracy and what kind of a threat to our democracy it is, real or perceived, and then what can we do to make sure that doesn't happen anymore? Isn't that kind of the purpose of the hearing?
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, there are those people who really think that the purpose of government is to get to the bottom of problems and to do problem solving. And then there are those of us who think that the real purpose of government, according to most of these jabones, is that they is that they to self-advance at any cost and forget about any of the substance of stuff. So there, Mike, that's the best answer I can give you.
No, I mean, they can take it anywhere it wants to go. He's already acknowledged that he misspoke and told Al Franken, Senator Franken, an incorrect answer when Franken happened to ask him whether he had any contact with Russians, you know, after the campaign or during the campaign. And he had, in fact, but he said no. And then he came out and he apologized. So, I mean, will he apologize again? Is this to get him up there to make him apologize, or is it to probe the real threat that we're perceiving ourselves as facing.
I think it also can't be underlooked, and I believe it was or overlooked that you were you said this, JP. I mean, he relishes this. I mean, this is a guy who has been a career politician, and you may whatever your thoughts are about him, he's very good at this.
He's excellent at it, and he requested that it become a public hearing, and it is. I find it hard to believe that these public hearings are how the government is going to solve problems. They're really made for TV media events so that these politicians, I think, can get on TV and self-aggrandize themselves. And after watching the Comey testimony, which a lot of people will criticize me for saying, I thought it was about a tie game. Half the stuff was pro-Trump, half the stuff was anti-Trump. But then I turned on cable news after the Comey testimony.
Watch different cables,
and
right?
I watched MSNBC.
Right.
And it seemed like they saw a much different hearing than Fox News.
Really?
And each of them said, well, that was a 100-0 blowout. MSNBC said that was horrible for Trump.
Right.
Fox News said that was great for Trump. And they will do the same thing with this testimony no matter what happens.
But do you think Sessions going before this committee in public is part of a whole White House communications effort, or is that unilateral on his part that he wants to get out there and sort of protect and defend his president? Which do you think it is?
Well, an interesting thing is the White House basically says, we're not putting him out there. We don't know about this. He's kind of on his own. They're playing dumb, almost pretending like they're upset with him doing it. I think it is likely a communication strategy on behalf of the White House getting a credible former senator out there who will be well prepared to push their narrative on the whole Russia Comey thing and get a lot of press as well with it. I think that's probably what's happening.
Well, it'll be an interesting afternoon.
Well, you know, once again, it may well be that if you are right in your hypothesis as to what this is all about, once again, it may well be that they're underestimating the American people by his going there. I mean, I have a feeling that the strategy we're going to see is he's a question he doesn't want to answer. He's going to say to us, "I can't answer that because of executive privilege." Anything, any good one, you know, good fastball, he's going to hit.
I mean, one of the questions will be the Comey assertion. I can't speak about that in an open session,
right.
Senator, but in the private session, I can discuss that more, relating to the question about why Sessions needed to recuse himself, you know, in the Russian probe. Yeah, you know, Comey kind of threw Sessions under the bus without really saying why, and maybe Sessions will answer that in public today.
Those instances where Comey said, "I can't talk about that in a public session," that actually added to the intrigue and helped Comey.
The drama. Yeah.
To the extent that Sessions has to rely on that, that is not going to be good for him. If they ask him these tough questions on, did you have XYZ conversation with the president, and he says, "I don't want to answer," that is going to be very bad television
well,
for
that's right.
the administration.
Well, that's right. But what happens when they ask him about Mueller? You had good things to say. Everybody had good things to say about the guy. Now the president's lawyer is talking about firing Mueller.
Well, a good friend of the president said that on TV, and then they're kind of backing off of that.
Well, there's that's a weird story, too.
Yeah, very weird.
That's
yeah.
a very strange story. But also, do you ask Jeff Sessions, by the way, apparently you offered your resignation a week and a half ago.
Yeah, that's got to come up. I mean, that was a report in the New York Times that the White House pushed back on, that Sessions, because it alleged that Trump was angry at Sessions for recusing himself and then putting it into his aides, his deputy's hands, and it was his deputy that brought in Bob Mueller, mm-hmm. the former FBI director, to be the special counsel, and that's causing some angst in the Trump White House, and because of this blowout, Sessions offered to resign, and Trump said don't. You know, that was the report. So it'll be interesting.
And it's been around for quite a while.
Right, right. It'll be interesting to see if he addresses
like
that
yeah.
and whether he's asked about that. And I'm sure it'll be great theater. I also agree, JP, that your comparison to the undercard kind of trumping the main event is possible.
So I remember, I'm so old, I remember running home to watch the Kefauver hearings on corruption in the drug industry. It was unbelievable. And the Army McCarthy hearings. They were quite something.
You ran home from
PS 75, the Emily Dickinson School.
To watch the McCarthy hearings?
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, that was the response. Wow.
What seems so funny about that? When I was a graduate student, I had sent away for all of the Kefauver hearings, and I made my bookshelf out of them. You know, my student bookshelf out of them. I just put them up. Some people use bricks.
Good. Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Do you really mean that?
Mm-hmm. I do, actually.
Okay, all right.
No, I find that kind of stuff interesting. So when it comes to, we have about 4 minutes before we have to go over to a news break. Dennis Rodman is in North Korea, and I don't know how serious we take this story. But it seems, is it true? And I asked the journalists in the room because I heard this reported yesterday that he's the only American to have had a one-on-one meeting with Kim Jong-un. Is that true?
I'm unaware of anybody else who has access to him. I'm expecting Megyn Kelly will have an interview with him after her Putin interview is aired, or maybe
Alex,
Oliver Stone will go and
do
a series.
Well, the Alex Jones, yeah.
But I know of no other journalist who's gotten in over there, he's not a journalist.
Yeah,
what does that accomplish, and is that a story?
He's teaching him how to do three-pointers from the side.
It's fascinating. As we, I think, started to discuss earlier, Dennis Rodman is friendly. I don't know if they're friends, but has been friendly with Donald Trump. I mean, they posed for photos together.
Good point. He visited
Trump at the Trump Tower. But there were a lot of people who visited Trump in and out after he was elected to kind of pay their
respects. He was a former celebrity apprentice.
That's right. That's how he would
contestant,
know.
Contestant, yes.
Sure, yeah.
So they're buds.
And so, you know, you could argue that this could be a go-between. He might be carrying a message from the American president to the president of South Korea.
Now we do,
or North Korea.
No, we
and,
do. But I do know that we had with the Russian thing. You know, we had him touting Putin as a great man and all that during the campaign. Now. He was saying bad things during the campaign about the North Koreans, but he has changed his narrative now. So now he's talking about he's a gentleman. He's a gentleman, meaning Un is a gentleman.
Kim Jong-un is a gentleman, yeah, according to President Trump?
That's right. Mm-hmm. So he changed, and he could sit down with him. He's smart and all the rest. So
he's using flattery to flatter Kim Jong-un because it's said that he really likes flattery.
Maybe it's more than that.
I would think that that potentially Republicans might say,
"That was good, Mike.
This is what person is better to send a message to Kim Jong-un?" And if Trump is trying to intimidate him, then Dennis Rodman. Here's a guy who was one of the best rebounders of all time. He won championships with both the Detroit Pistons and the Chicago Bulls, and is a physically intimidating guy. He's massive.
Yeah.
And if he has a message from President Trump to try to intimidate Kim Jong-un, I can't think of a better messenger for that intimidation than Dennis Rodman.
Or,
I would be intimidated.
Yeah, but it could actually be some kind of an offer of conciliation, or let's tone it down and let's have some secret meetings.
Hasn't helped in the past.
Well, maybe not.
You know what else it could be? A bunch of garbage, meaning nothing.
Perhaps.
All right. With that said, we're going to take a break. We'll go to news with Ray Graff, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation and move on to other topics in the news, including the we want to talk about the Trump's holdings. We also want to talk about the travel ban setback. So we have some other big issues to discuss. So we will talk about all of that and much more when we return. Did you miss us? Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. We were gone for a few minutes for a news break. We are back now. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller. He's from the Empire Report. Mike Spain's from the Times Union. You know, Alan's WAMC. And he has letters in front of him. He's going to read them right now, and then we're going to move on to other topics.
Right. Dear panel.
Yes?
I have no tolerance for Trump But I had the exact opposite reaction. This was beneath Schumer and better left to the late night comedians. He was not only mocking the president, but had his staff mock him. Like Michelle Obama said, they go high, we go, they go low, we go high. Keep it professional, Chuck. Other than that, very supportive of Chuck Schumer. Like Joe said, he took the time to do this and had nothing better to do. And that's from Bob. Keep up the good work. Panel, Bobby and Troy. Nelson Rockefeller was 5'10". That does not qualify as short. Speaking of someone who is taller than I look, says Jonathan. I don't know. I remember him as a smaller guy than that.
I could see eye to eye with Nelson Rockefeller.
Rosemary says, our Rosemary.
Our Rosemary?
Yeah. Wouldn't you have just loved to hear one cabinet minister's member stand up and say, Trump, he's a big chump. This is so stupid. I'm going out for a latte.
Yes. Yes, Rosemary, we would have loved to have heard that.
Michael says, they all despised him when he was running and putting out vulgar, ignorant things. Kellyanne Conway, I remember, called him an incompetent, ignorant fool during the campaign. Paul Ryan didn't want him at his campaign rallies. They're also obviously kowtowing to the dictator. And that's from Michael.
Well, you could argue they're also using him to get their agenda through, you know, very effectively.
Yeah. You hold on to those for a second, Joe. Sessions, the bad elf. McConnell, the bad turtle. Gowdy, the zombie, et al. Quite a group. Hedrick Herzberg writes in The New Yorker, there's no great mystery about the motives behind this deliberate misnaming Democrat Party as a slur, or intended to be, a handy way to express contempt. Aesthetic judgments are subjective, of course, but Democrat Party is jarring, verging on ugly. It fairly screams, rat. And that's from Glenn. Okay. And Hal says, welcome to the panel. JP. Hal says, did anyone involved in the cabinet meeting consider that Trump would realize the press was praise was scripted? Or is it the case that it wouldn't much matter to him? And that's from Hal. What?
I didn't understand that. I'm sorry.
Well, did anyone involved in the cabinet meeting consider that Trump would realize that the praise was scripted? It's absurd. It's an absurd premise.
You mean he might get the impression that it was orchestrated?
Yeah, I... Okay.
Okay, Peggy takes me to task on this Democrat thing. Alan, you're wrong. It's a Democratic senator could mean any senator who adheres to the principles of democracy. Democrat senator identifies which political party the senator belongs to. There's one for you, my
friend.
Must
be a Republican writing that.
That's what I was thinking, but probably not. Probably an English major. So, good morning, panel. Language matters. The transfer from the term Democratic to Democrat, Reed bureaucrat, was orchestrated by Newt Gingrich and the Contract on America, Repubs, as you follow up to making liberal a dirty word in the American consciousness. And the Republicans are religious about sticking together on this and so many other things. Eric in Richmond, Massachusetts. Oh, boy. And John writes, there have been media leaks that Sessions will testify that he was concerned Comey's lack of raising issues when Comey confronted Loretta Lynn emailing the DNC and the Clinton email investigation was in the bag. I can't read it. It's just too long. Sorry, John. Trump's cabinet is blessed, says Herman, to have him as their president. Do you feel blessed or mess with having the Donald? And Stephen says, Mattis and McMaster and maybe a few others are doing their patriotic duty. They are sacrificing their reputations by attempting damage control. Steve. I heard on the news last night, says Patricia, that Trump is willing to testify under oath about James Comey. I don't think he knows what that means, truth, or whatever he thinks at the moment. And that's Pat from Canaan. Ellen says, while Trump's antics are funny, ridiculous, criminal, arrogant, and potentially deadly, what are the law-abiding citizens supposed to do to get rid of him? As a child of the 60s who had marched and fought for what I thought was right, what can be done other than a violent takeout of the destructor-in-chief?
I think there's other options.
I would say
well, his numbers keep going down. I would remind everybody of that. That means something. Panel, looking forward to Mueller's replacement, Gary Busey.
Gary Busey.
Busey, who's that?
He is an actor, a troubled actor, I would say was probably an apt phrase. He has had brushes not only with with motorcycles but also with substance abuse, and was also a Celebrity Apprentice winner, I believe.
Abigail, who calls and writes today, drivel and more drivel. I guess what you must fill the allotted radio space. However, keep up the good work, Abigail.
Sort of a backhanded compliment,
yes,
isn't
right,
it?
Yeah. Right. You'd rather have dribble than some of the other things.
Pretty maybe. Crappy content, but thank you for listening.
Stuart writes, and I don't know if we read it or not, but I'll read it again. Why are you not discussing the statement by Trump's friend that he's considering firing Mueller? We've been discussing it all morning.
And we discussed yesterday. It's a rather muddled affair and sort of a he said, they said sort of thing, but there you go.
Chris Ruddy is in the news business. He wants people on his Newsmax website. He didn't say that Trump told him this. It was simply a guess from a friend of Trump. The media is making a big thing about it. I can't imagine that Trump would fire Comey and then fire Mueller. I wouldn't say he would not do it because you can't say he wouldn't.
Right. We've been wrong before in our predictions.
We've been wrong before, but... I think it's a little bit of a made up scandal with Chris
Ruddy. But Ruddy then gets into a bit of a not a fight, but a disagreement with Sean Spicer, who says, "Well, none of this happened." And then Ruddy says, "Well, yeah, it did." And then so then those two sort of going back and forth. So it is he was all over the shows this morning on Morning Joe and CNN. Ruddy was.
Yeah. Wow.
Remind everybody who Ruddy is.
Ruddy, well, he just said the Newsmax. Newsmax CEO. That's all right. Newsmax CEO, and a friend of Trump's. There does seem to be a little dissension in the ranks.
Why did Dick Nixon do his dirty stuff and fire everybody? Why? Because he had to. Because the hounds were getting too close. Ipso facto, this is the same thing happening here. If the guy gets too close, he has to fire him.
The scenario, I think, was set up by Newt Gingrich. He's a big Trump supporter, of course, and he says that it may be that it's time to rethink Robert Mueller's ability to be fair. You know, and if they're beginning to phrase it that way, they're saying that it's unfair, it's partisan, they're going after me, we have to stop this. I mean, that is a sort of a justification for taking action.
To put it mildly, very mildly, and really repressing every instinct I have, Gingrich is such a jerk. And you know why? Because he, when Mueller was appointed, could not have been more effusive in his praise of Mueller as an incorruptible, wonderful, decent man.
Well, now
nothing
he says,
means anything anymore.
Right. Now he says Republicans are delusional if they think of the special counsel as going to be fair. You know, so he's playing it both ways.
All right. So let us go to do you have more there?
There's a ton. Would you rather go somewhere else?
Well, let's talk about the travel ban setback. I think this is an interesting story and an important one that we should discuss on the program before we adjourn for the morning. Once again, the Second Federal Appeals Court has ruled against President Trump's revised travel ban, delivering on Monday the latest in a string of defeats for the administration's efforts to limit travel from several predominantly Muslim countries. The administration has already sought a Supreme Court review of a similar decision issued last month by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit in Richmond, Virginia. Monday's decision came from the U.S. Supreme Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit in San Francisco. The two courts employed different reasoning to arrive at the same basic conclusion. The Fourth Circuit said the revised executive order violated the First Amendment's prohibition of government establishment of religion. The Ninth Circuit, by contrast, rested its conclusions on statutory grounds. It said Mr. Trump has exceeded the authority Congress granted him in making national security judgments in the realm of immigration without adequate justification. We should note that they also brought the tweets into it and said that they were part of the record as far as the president's calculating behind why this order
motive,
was
yeah.
The motive. Yeah, thank you. was put into place in the first place.
So I got my eye on Gorsuch. I can tell you why when it gets to the Supreme Court. Here's a guy who said that Trump's clearly was referring to Trump. Dismissal of federal judges as, you know, terrible people and all the rest of it was just wrong and unfortunate. Now it gets to the Supreme Court of the United States. Does he in fact go with all of these federal judges who are one after another coming out with legal precedent and everything else? Or does he do the Republican thing? It's that easy.
The travel ban in terms of a policy is obviously a controversial issue. Republicans tend to believe that we should have stricter controls on who comes into our country, and Democrats, I think, in general, believe we should be a little looser in terms of that. The fact that these judges are pushing back on Trump is a great thing politically for Trump because it helps him with his base. Beating up on courts, on unelected judges, is good for Trump to help him with his base. In terms of policy, it's up to anybody to figure out whether it's good or not that the travel ban isn't in place. But I agree with you, Alan, that the Supreme Court decision will be one of the biggest in many, many years, how they decide on this.
If they take it. I mean, the option, because it was a unanimous ruling by the appellate court, they don't have to take it.
If they don't take it.
It would stand.
Yeah.
The ban would be
But that is, if they
stopped.
Don't take it.
It would be banned,
but
yes.
But if they don't take it, they're still speaking out on the favor of the anti-Trump.
Sure. Actually, I think that was an interesting insight, because if the Supreme Court does take it and they end up siding with the lower courts, it still helps Trump. You know, he can even, and then he can say that Gorsuch, see, I picked him and it didn't help me. You know, he was.
But also, and again, correct me if I'm wrong here, but he is now arguing going to a Supreme Court with a revised travel ban that he doesn't like and has tweeted about, that it is
right.
Watered down, ineffective, and not good enough.
Yeah, and it's politically correct this time around, he complained.
It helps him politically. When people in America see two attacks in London in 2 weeks by radically inspired jihadists, Americans, I think, are nervous. They say that could potentially happen in this country, and it helps Trump's helps Trump with his base for him to say, we need to stop this. We can't let that come to our shore. The policy, whether it's good policy or not, I'm not an expert on that, but in terms of politics, I think it's a plus for Trump.
It rallies the base.
Yes.
And really, Alan, as you referred to earlier, it's all about holding on to that base, which is getting smaller gradually.
Well,
it's a little bit smaller.
But there was an interesting analysis in the Times which talked about the passion quotient. In other words, the number hasn't changed, but the passion behind each individual has gone down. So that's what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. And that could be a time bomb, in a sense that when something big happens, they're not going to be there for him. It would be the last straw. But it's interesting. But I mean, I think by and large, his base, the core of the people who supported him, the 37 or 34, depending on which poll you look at today, is pretty much pleased with what he's doing. And they regard the media and the Democrats and others as trying to just they're still angry about the election that they don't like the results of. And they're
just
trying
got a letter
to
that said that.
Yeah.
You people can't live with the election results. Speaker Ryan, according to CNN, is saying, just let Mueller do his job. That has to be seen as a shot at the president. Don't you dare, because that'll really drag us all under.
Or was it Schiff who said that Wasn't he that came out very strongly?
The chairman of the intelligence committee.
The head Democrat.
Yeah.
Head Democrat. Yeah. The co-chair. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but if that happens, when the Speaker of the House of Representatives, let's remember that the House of Representatives is basically an autocracy. It's an oligarchy. And the guy who's sitting at the top, unlike the Senate, really does control the plays. So if the Speaker says, let Mueller do his job, the history books later on may be saying that's where the impeachment thing got started.
If I were in the White House, I would tell Chris Ruddy and I would tell Newt Gingrich, let's not talk about Mueller. Let's talk about some other topic. Mueller is not going to help us in the 2018 elections. If we're talking about Robert Mueller for the next 18 months, we're going to lose the House of Representatives, and then we're going to, you know, we'll deal with what happens when we lose the House of Representatives. But I agree with Speaker Ryan. They should let him do his job and do his thing and almost pretend like he's not doing anything so they can talk about other stuff.
Just a quick aside on that. I agree with you. The narrative, though, which I think is because Ruddy was making this point in the interview that I heard with Chris Cuomo on CNN this morning, where he was saying that there was a conflict of interest with Mueller because he had interviewed with the president for the FBI job just prior to being named the special counsel. Explain to me the rationale of how that becomes a conflict of interest, given all of the other conflicts of interest that we have had.
Ever had a conversation with Trump about any job obviously has a conflict of interest, according to the outsiders.
But could he be perhaps angry at Trump and out to get Trump because Trump did not choose him to succeed James Comey? Perhaps. You know.
Or that he's really good friends with James Comey. But imagine trying to find someone in the United States that is going to be not have an opinion on Trump. Does not either love him or hate him.
What you want or is say that he loves him but really hates him.
What you want is somebody who's really competent, who's been proven to be highly ethical and capable. And that's Bob Mueller. And that was a good choice.
All right. We are out of time.
No.
Yeah. Sorry.
Dum, dum, dum.
My thanks to the panel this morning for joining us. Thank you for your letters as well. J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, and Alan Chartok, thank you all for being with us. And we'll be back after this short break.